Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann, and I am here with my teammate, Janice Cunning. And we are thrilled to have not one, not two, but three guests today. Three incredible, intelligent, wonderful women who have put together a book called Collecting Courage, and I'd like to introduce them. We have Anika Allen, Camila Pereira, and Nicole Salmon here with us today. And I'd love for you all to start us off, please, just with a little bit of an origin story. How did this collection begin to come together?
Well, our origin story, I have to say, I'm gonna tap my sister Nicole to chime in here because it's not actually that short, but we do include it in the beginning of the book. And so ultimately, Collecting Courage was born out of another project called Our Right to Heal. And Our Right to Heal was a project we did with the Association of Fundraising Professionals that was publicized last year in May, exactly a week before the George Floyd murder. And so, as you know, the issue of race and equity came to the forefront in a way that was really unique. And it catapulted us into a space where our voices as Black women and Black people were being heard differently for me, you know, the first time ever in my life. And, you know, parallel to that, though, was another story, another unfolding happening, which I'm going to ask Nicole to share because she does such a good job of talking about what was on that parallel track with our friend Gail Pico. And so our Right to Heal story and our relationship with Gail sort of converged at a point that turned into Collecting Courage.
Great, thanks, Anika. So I have actually, you know, I knew Gail Pico from maybe the early 2000s, late 1990s or something like that. And we've remained in contact ever since. So Gail has written two books. And of course, the last one she wrote was Cap in Hand. And our Black Canadian Fundraising Collective had actually selected Gail's book as our book review for the month of December, I guess, 2019 now. And so I reached out to Gail and said, hey, Gail, can you come and join us for the conversation? And of course, Gail graciously said, yes, she would. So during that book review, I had a great discussion, and Gail at that point sort of raised the issue that, you know, she's always wanted to do something, a compilation of stories of what it feels like being Black in fundraising. And so that was sort of planted at this discussion. She met all these amazing women, and I guess that just sort of, oh, this looks like a great group. And of course, as Anika said, the George Floyd situation happened, but Gail was also launching the charity report in, I think it was February, March of 2020. And at that point, she was also thinking of getting into the publishing business and launching her Gail K. Pico books. And again, it's timing. It's like that perfect storm where these two things sort of came together, and Gail reached out to me saying, hey, you know what? I think that idea, all the work that you guys have been doing, it seems like a perfect time to move forward with that. And from there, first call was to Anika saying, hey, our group might be looking at something really phenomenal here. And it took off from there. And of course, Camila, you know, heard about it and she's like, I'm in, I'm jumping on board. So we were pretty happy about that.
Yeah. So it you know, and I've had a privilege of attending a few of your events, like your book launch and your holiday event. And what really struck me was one of the gifts, I guess, of being the co-editors is you got to read it first and you've had a chance to read the stories, you know, multiple times. So what was the first impact and where are you now of listening to these different voices?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to start. So first of all, let's just set the stage here. So the authors didn't all submit their stories at the same time. So that's one thing. So we got to read these stories as standalone stories and spend time with them, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, we would read them individually first. And then depending on the story, we may jump on WhatsApp and start like talking to one another immediately about what we were reading. Or we waited until we came together in our regular editors meeting to really unpack what we were being exposed to. And so for me, I can say that, you know, none of the stories were shocking or surprising. The thing for me that was the most interesting was understanding how each of my sisters and my brother managed the circumstances, what they learned from it, how it has influenced who they are today, their articulation of the joy and the pain and the freedom and the love is what continually impressed me and helped me know them better, each of them. You know, all of our authors are friends and we know them all, but I would say we know them deeper and wider and taller now because of this experience. I don't know, ladies, what do you think?
I think for me, and I remember the first story we read, and I think it's also important to share the timeline that we actually had to write the stories and all of that, right? So it was a very short, maybe 6 weeks for the contributors to write, for us to read, and the feedback to them and submitting. It was really tight, because one thing we knew was that we really wanted the book to come out end of November. Mm-hmm. And so for that, we kind of worked the other way around, like going backwards. And we started during the summer, maybe, was it August, I think. So it was tight. Another thing that I think it's important to share is that the contributors, no one knew what the other person was writing about. So no one knew who else was writing under pain or under joy, or and no one read anyone else's story before we actually had our authors and book launch that we had 1 week before the book was actually launched officially. So no one knew about anyone else's. But I remember the first story I read was Crystal, was the first person who submitted a story. And it just gave me goosebumps again. Because I started reading it and I was just like, oh my God, it was so powerful the way it starts. And at some point I had to stop, because I think I got really emotional, especially when she was talking about looking at herself at the mirror and crying and being like, no, and the words, and goosebumps again, by the way. For certain stories, we kind of know what we all go through, because we, in our collective and our network, we talk about it. But for me, I think reading different people's stories and knowing about their different backgrounds, but there's this line, this thread that goes in every single story. And I think that's what for me was really... I don't want to say surprising, but I think it's hard to see that it really happens everywhere with everyone, regardless of where you're coming from. We have people that got to Canada at an younger age, at an older age, but the way you treat it, and we know it's all because of racism. So regardless of where you're coming from, right? It has this unique way of treating you based on your skin color and what you represent. So I think that for me was very impactful, very impactful.
I'd like to actually, you know, Kimala and Anika I just want to build on this, the things that they've captured, because we felt all of that. There's that timing, the press, trying to sort of read this story. And I think it's, you know, as co-editors, we were looking at three, we were experiencing the book in three ways, right? So one is reading the stories and understanding where that author is coming from. So experiencing that along with the author. Then we had the other hat we had on as co-editors, right? So how do you critically look at this story, making sure that we get the very best out of the author? So we're looking at that, you know, we're coming at it with that lens. But we're also coming at it at a lens because we're also contributors to the book. So again, it's how are we situating our story and our contribution to the book? So it's like those three experiences all in one. And it was certainly a very powerful moment. Camilla mentions about goosebumps. I can't tell you how many moments, goosebump moments we have had. And even when we came up with the blog and we have all those quotes, we had already selected all those quotes, right? We went through every story and it's not just one quote. It's like a lot of quotes because they're so powerful right throughout the piece. So I think it has just been an interesting experience that we went through.
I just wanted to dovetail on that because I love what Nicole just said, and it reminded me that one of the things that I tried to do, and I did, was write my piece before I read anybody's. I wanted to write, I knew what I wanted to write. I knew, you know, what theme I was very focused on that. I wanted to really get that out of the way before I started to like really dive into the work that my brother and sisters were sharing. And it was emotional. I mean, some made me cry, some made me angry. But then obviously when you come away from that for a minute, and then put on your editor's hat, it's a different function. And then, I mean, the familial feeling of the whole thing, because you're not just critiquing it, you're also in it. I mean, your piece gets critiqued too, right? It lent itself to what I feel is a really wonderful community. Of friends and relatives. I mean, we're family.
Yeah. And we also got to know each other better within the editors, because I had met Nicole through the collective, but I had not had this intense relationship with her. And so we're also working, you know, we're doing this work that relates to the book, but we're working within the three of us as well, because we're getting to know each other. And I think this was all part of the process as well, which was amazing. So I think, so we had weekly meetings and in the WhatsApp group, and I think it got to a point where we were literally talking every single day. We would just chat every
one
day.
One way or the other.
One way or the other. It was either it's because true. Of something you just read, or either something just came to mind that we could do afterwards or for the website. Or so I think it was, we also had that experience.
We continue to have it.
So I wanted to ask, I know that the stories are grouped into these sort of topics of joy, pain, freedom, love. And I'm curious, how did that come to be? That those were the ways that you edited and sorted all of these beautiful stories.
I think Anita should start it too. Yeah, for sure.
I think we're all sort of smiling and laughing because we did get asked this question not long ago. And yes. The answer is a little, the answer is kind of funny because none of us actually have a really strong memory of exactly how it came to be. And what we landed on in that last conversation was that there was a real spiritual element to the conversation we were having. And there were various creative processes also happening individually and collectively amongst us at the same time. We had just finished presenting at the Uprooted retreat, and we had just finished talking. The theme was joy and pain, and it was really looking at our right to heal. And so we certainly brought those two themes to the table because of that recent experience. But you know, there was talk about quadrants and you know, wanting to juxtapose some things. And then also, I think at the, you know, in its essence, we really wanted to illuminate what we believe are experiences of Blackness. If we could theme, if we could group them into themes, right? Like, what would be the really major things we'd want to focus on? And so, I think we had this was not a short conversation, by the way, that we don't recall. It was more like a 2.5 hour conversation, where we eventually landed on these four. It was in retrospect, I don't know that I've ever been involved in a creative process quite like that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of physicality to it too. So
there was, yeah.
Yeah. I love that because, I mean, Margaret knows this too. Like, that's what we find on our team, you know, the fundraising leadership team. It's like, so often something gets co-created and the magic is how organic it is. You don't actually know, like, where did that come from? You know, like, it's not like anyone's idea that actually exists. So one of the things I think is really powerful is how many layers there are to what this book can do in the world. So share with us, like, some of your hopes for what will happen as a result of this book, you know, particularly in the nonprofit sector.
Well, the list is long. Let me just start there. The list is long around the hopes. But I think as a very natural starting point, and the book does this well, I think we need to admit the problem. I think we have to acknowledge the problem. You know, until we acknowledge the problem, we will never get to a solution. We can't, in fact, get to a solution. I mean, it was just last year, you know, we people in the highest offices in this land were still denying the existence and still deny, right, the existence of racism in Canada. And yet our experiences, our realities speak differently. And so I think the book absolutely offers an opportunity for people to step inside a different world and a different experience. And, you know, listening is great and reading is great, but there really does need to be some acknowledgement and that the problem is vast, and it extends beyond our sector, but in fact, the problem outside of our sector is what permeates our sector, right? And so we have some responsibility where we work to begin to look at the problem and acknowledge it. And I really love this, you know, get off the drug of denial. You know, it's addictive. And we need to begin accepting some truth.
Yeah.
And truth will often come through voices like ours.
In addition to that piece around the acknowledgement is you know, we recognize that, you know, we have to tell our own stories. We also have to collect the data, right? And data for us is in the form of stories and our experiences. And we know we needed to have that documented, because so often part of that whole denial is, well, we don't know anything about this. There's no stories out there like this. So the first part is collecting, you know, the data. The second thing we wanted to do is that, you know, this, you know, some of these experiences are current that we captured, that were captured in the books, current. Some of them are from long ago, but it's an issue today, right? So we wanted to make sure that people didn't have this revisionist thing. Oh, you know, that's how it used to be, or whatever the case may be. This is how it is. And we know, basically, from our, the Canadian Black Fundraisers Collective, that we have people in the profession, young folks coming up. I'm a seasoned professional. I'm seasoned a fundraiser, let me put it that way. But there are young folks coming up, and their stories are shocking. And it's happening, and people are thinking that, okay, their behaviors are not having impact on young fundraisers. So we wanted to make sure we reached out to them to sort of say, hey, we understand what you're going through, and there is a supportive network of folks that understand it, and we believe you, right? So that was the first thing, is validating those experiences. It's not you, as Crystal said, is it me? Yeah, you know, these experiences are real. It's not a figment of your imagination. So I think that was one of the other things we wanted to do. And we also wanted to be a wake-up call, right? So it's acknowledging, and again, people cannot hide behind a veil that they don't know. As Anika said, this is the truth for these fundraisers. These are our experiences. And it becomes a wake-up call. What is the sector going to do? It's systemic, and something has to change. And it changes both at the individual level, but we also know at the structural level, it also has to change.
I recently had a really interesting conversation with a colleague who is white, who just read the book, and who has quite a bit of responsibility in the sector. And one of the things he said to me was, I think we need to start naming names. And I thought that was really very interesting, that was one of the things that he felt most inspired to do after reading the book. He wants to know who these organizations are, and so that we can begin to do something about it.
Yeah. And I think, every time I think about why is it that I immediately said, I'm in, why is that? And I think it has to do a lot with what Nicole just mentioned. You know, we have people that are coming into the profession now, and we have seasoned. So when I see in our collective people that have been in fundraising for 30 years, talking about what has happened to them, people that have been there for 10, and I have been there for 5, and we see that it's pretty similar. Right? I wonder, when is it going to change? I think a lot of the things that we see when we talk about racism, it goes sort of like, oh, this happened to my grandfather, this happened to my mom, it's happening to me. And so do we want this to happen to our child or to our grandchild? No. So it gets to a point where you have to make some noise. And I think that's what our book is doing for sure, right? You need to make some noise, and you need to voice it, and you need to have people to actually know what's happening. What Nicole said, it's easy to be like, oh, but I don't know. So there, that's gone now. And my hope is really for the future, that when I am in the profession for 20 years and I talk to someone that has been there for 2 or 3, that's not happening anymore. That's what I want to see. And that's what drove me to be like, I'm in. Because I really hope that for the next ones to come, it will be much easier. Not easy. Let's not use the word easier. It will be equitable. Right? That's what we want to see. Right? It will be fair. It will be equitable. They'll be treated in the right way. That for me, that's why it goes beyond the book. And that's where I really hope that to see in the sector.
Yeah, one of the things as I was reading the book, very high impact. So thank you for putting this together and making it available. And one of the things that was so high impact was the universal nature of, you know, I mean, every story is different, but there's so much collectively that was shared by each of your authors and contributors. And it made me wonder about collecting courage. Certainly I got the courage part, but there are so many other words. And I'm, you know, what was the impact you hoped to have by choosing the word collecting for all of these stories, the courage in all of these stories?
That was another interesting conversation that we had, the title of the book.
It kind of goes
with how we chose joy, pain, freedom, love, right? I would love Anika to talk about that too, but one of the things that I remember was that we wanted the title to be something that would represent movement continuity. And I think that's why we chose collecting, right? Because it's something that keeps going. But I'm going to leave to...
Yep.
Cool.
That's true.
So it's really interesting. As in response to our right to heal, we ended up gathering as a group of Black women to do a session with the African American Development Officers Network to talk about, you know, our stories, our realities, and our experiences. And there was a version of the book title in that. Was it Collect Courage?
Collective courage. That's what it was.
Collective courage. Yeah. And we really liked that. And, you know, to Camila's point about, you know, we wanted it to be active and happening still, right? This is the reason why we changed it to collecting, but it really does accurately depict what we did both through our right to heal and also through collecting courage. You know, the gathering of our first person narratives, which is the stuff of primary documentation, right? Bringing them together was for the purpose of not just, you know, bringing people together, but also there's a power that is created in that space. And I almost can see us like bringing the stories in, into a safe space, into a place where we understand, into a place of acknowledgement, into a place of validation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of our authors, this is the first time they've ever put pen to paper as it relates to their experiences of being Black and at all in their entire lives, right? And so there's just something really special about creating that space, that collective space where we know we will belong and we fit in and we are understood.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, to just be that fly on the wall listening to our conversations and actually watching us go through this process and trying to figure this out. So we had talked about thread, and certainly that is a strong thing. We talked about the spine, right? So we were throwing out different words. And I think, you know, courage is not something, courage is many times a journey, right? And we're courageous at different points, right? So this is an idea about movement, right? This is a movement building. That's how I feel about this, right? I feel this is not a one-off thing. It's something that that's gonna grow, because you don't have change without having, a movement behind it to keep that momentum going, right? So that is really critical. So, you know, it. What happened is, I think on one of our conversations, you know, I think it came around and say, okay, what about collecting courage? And truly, we sort of, I remember saying, okay, let me sleep on it, right? Because I'm that sort of visceral. It's like, okay, do I feel it? Is it okay? Let's sleep on it. And then we came back to it and said, yeah, that is exactly what we're doing. And as Anika's saying, you know, you just sort of feel like, yeah, you know, along the way, it's not an individual exercise either. So that collective and collecting is part of that process. These conversations, sometimes when you land on something, you don't know the significance of it, but it gets revealed in some way. So something is operating in some way and pointing you in the right direction. So.
Yeah. That's great. I feel like I'm still like, I still am like, so like, I can't believe you did this so quickly. I was like, wow, it's stuck with me. So we're going to start to wrap up. And as you know, we like to give people something to try as a result of listening to this. And of course, what we want them to try is to order the book and read the book. But there's a very specific way, you know, that people can open their hearts and be with this book. So I'd love one of you to just share, like, how do you want people to approach this? And the first time and you know, the multiple times that they'll read it.
So I think open-hearted is a really great place to begin. I think that, you know, people who are not Black who are going to read this are going to be reading things they've never heard before, and they're going to be challenged, and they're going to maybe not they're maybe going to want to argue with, you know, the reality of the stories. And so, or they're going to feel really sad about the stories. And you know, my invitation, our invitation to the book is that you come suspending all of what you think you know about reality, right? Come understanding that there is another world and another way of being, and that all of these stories reflect multiple other ways of being and knowing and engaging and experiencing and surviving. And so when you come, when you decide to read it, you know, doing it with the utmost respect, doing it knowing that we are all connected as humans first, and that as humans, I think we have an obligation to understand the realities of others. These are the things that actually are the most powerful connections. And, you know, collecting comes from collectivism. And for Black people, descendants of Africa, collectivism is very much rooted in our culture and the way that we are. And it's a sharing. It is rooted in Ubuntu. I am because we are, right? And I think that extends also to the reader, and we hope that the reader is able to engage on that level with the content, and then take the content and begin to think about their own environments, right? When they have witnessed scenarios similar to the ones identified in the book, when they have maybe been party to some of the circumstances that have been described, and be prepared to be really honest about that. Again, we can't fix anything that we're unprepared to acknowledge.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I think that's the perfect place to wrap up our conversation. And thank you. As Margaret, I think you kicked off, it's like these three powerful powerhouse women. And, you know, we've had.
I just want to acknowledge not only the power of the stories that you have brought together, but also to say thank you for sharing your stories. And thank you on behalf of the planet for all of the contributions that you have made in your fundraising and nonprofit and volunteer and faith efforts. And it was my joy to learn each of your stories and contributions and to feel grateful for them.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah.
All right.
And I also feel like we should say, sorry, where can we buy the book? Where can people buy the book? There it is. Collectingcourage.org. .org. Okay.
.org. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we should mention, if people haven't yet, go back and there's a blog that we posted with the highlights from the book. Nice little preview if you haven't got your copy yet. And that we also have links to all three of these women on LinkedIn, so people can reach out and continue the conversation. Because I know that you love having these conversations, and we just so appreciate you. You know, you've given so much to us at the fundraising leadership team over the last year. So thank you for all of your contributions.
Thanks, Janice.
Pleasure
Thanks,
to
Margaret.
Be here, Janice. Thank you.
Yeah. So we are going to wrap up. I just want to let you know this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast. We're on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And we want you to, if you haven't already, right now, as soon as you stop listening, go and order that book and have a powerful reading experience. And once you get through it, then read it again, because there's just so much to take in and learn. So go put it into practice. Curiosity.